Welcome back to Head Games Radio with Seth Joyner. Seth, wanted to thank you for joining us. We talked last week about the tragedy of Andre Waters, and I thought I'd be remiss if I didn't talk about the subject of who you can trust in the NFL, who you learn to trust, whether some players make it too easy to be accessible, some players sometimes maybe make it too hard, and how that impacts a team. Here's Dr. Solomon from yesterday's show about separating out the yes-men, the entourage, if you will, that are just guys that are on along for the ride, and sometimes women as well, from those that are quality people, and what a difference that makes in whether a player's career has consistency.
Whether these people are trustworthy or not, because, you know, they can be one way. Oftentimes people that are just yes men and women will be one way with you, and they'll be totally different and really show their true colors with other people around you who aren't the star athlete. And a lot of it is looking in yourself and saying, look, what am I really looking for in this relationship, and what kind of a friend am I being? Life is so, as you know, Nick, and have recently learned through the loss of your mom, life is so short. We have to grasp every minute and really take good advantage of every day and put energy and time only into those relationships that really are fulfilling and reciprocal relationships.
What do you think about that? As you think about the tragedy with Andre and how difficult it is, as we talked about last week, for players to make that transition, even in the middle of their careers, making the transition from a public figure on the field to the private person off the field, you seem to have a good balance. Tell me what you've learned.
Well, I think it's, you know, I've said it many times before, I think it's just understanding and knowing who you are from the beginning, and knowing that whatever sport it is you play, whatever athletic endeavor it is that you're in, that is not what defines you as a person. And I think some guys, what the problem is, you know, they become popular because of a sport. They get attention because of a sport. They become monetarily successful because of a sport. So everything that they do is identified within that sport. So then their identity becomes that sport. Well, what happens when you can no longer play that sport anymore? Now, what is your identity? You know, so I think you have to know who you are way before you undertake whatever athletic endeavor professionally it is that you do, and always be grounded in that way and understand, you know, what type of business, you know, it really is. As far as having yes people around you and whatnot, you know, I just have this thing with people that I'm friends with. You know, if I can't be frank and upfront and honest with you at all times, you know, then you're probably not a good fit for a friend of mine. Because if you step out of line and you do something, then you know what, I'm going to call you on it, no matter who you are. And that, you know, Charles Barkley's a friend of mine, Michael Jordan's a friend of mine, Tiger Woods is a friend of mine. If you step out of line and you do something that's wrong, then I'm just going to call you on it, you know. And if you got an issue with it, then you have an issue with it. But at the same token, I expect for, if I step out of line and say or do something that's wrong, I expect for you to step up and do the same thing. To me, that's a friend, and those are the type of people that I want to be around.
One of the things Charles Barkley talked about on a previous show was looking at the sphere of influence, and he used to think he had to influence everyone, and now, as he looks back, he says his biggest regret is trying to influence everyone rather than picking and choosing the right people and making sure he was focused on what he did. And it seems also, one of the things that people that have met Charles, I've been lucky enough to get to know him a little bit, is that, you know, whoever Charles is in front of you is going to be who Charles is when you're not there as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is such a crucial thing. As you look back at your career, Seth, and the Philadelphia Eagles team that had that outstanding defense when Andre Waters was there, you know, there were relationships that were pretty darn trustworthy, pretty darn cohesive. What was necessary to generate that level of teamwork in Philadelphia where the spotlight's so intense?
Well, I think, first of all, Buddy instilled in it. You know, we all grew up together in the game. You know, everybody on that team, from the time that I got there, Reggie was the elder statesman. He had already been, you know, in the NFL maybe 2 years with the Eagles. But everybody on that team was only, you know, a second, third-year player. And then when I got there, you know, after that, everybody was either drafted or, you know, they came via free agency, you know, whatever that situation might have been. But we were relatively young kids, you know, starting off playing the game. And the greatest thing that Buddy did was he, you know, instilled this idea of a family type unit, you know. And you know how a family is, Nick. I mean, you can't hit my brother without having to fight me, you know. So that's the mentality and that's the attitude. It was us against the world. And that it was like that from day one. Once he got his guys, it was like, okay, now this, you know, he encouraged us to do things together away from the game. He encouraged us to get to know each other, you know, because I think when you know a guy and you know him away from the game, then you will do things on the field. You will lay it out on the line a little more for a guy that you got love for than for a guy that you won't, you know. So it wasn't a situation where we were playing for ourselves individually. You know, I was playing for the other 11 guys, you know, the other 10 guys playing next to me, and they were playing for me. When you get 11 guys with that type of mentality, well, now you got something. Now, the big challenge is trying to get 53 guys, you know, with that mentality. But, you know, that's basically, you know, the way we were raised in the game, you know.
You know, I look at the teams that have that right now. I think of Indianapolis and what they went through with Tony Dungy. And even though he's not a guy that shouts and is intense like a Buddy Ryan, he's created that sense of cohesiveness and commitment to each other because they've been through some of the worst times together. And that's why I think they have a shot this year. I think Dallas, with all the distractions with T.O., the way they continue to play pretty darn well most of the time, and of course now with Romo especially so, and then New England, with the loss of a number of key players, yet there's always that sense of loyalty and sort of humility that they're focused on the team first. In Chicago, finally Chicago, which did lose, but they seem to, with Lovie Smith, have created that sort of, as you say, family feeling.
Well, I think that's what great coaches do. They understand, you know, that a 17-week schedule is a long time. You go through the mini camps, you go through training camps, you go through, you know, the first game of the season, and it's a long season, you know. And there are going to be some highs and lows, some roller coaster rides, some guys that get injured. You know, you're going to be in some games, you know, where you're going to just beat people to death. And then you're going to be in some games, you know, where it's just going to be an all-out battle, you know, for 60 minutes. And you understand that with those ebbs and flows and those ups and downs that you've got to have guys that are mentally tough. You know, the teams that don't win, you look at our Arizona Cardinals here, the biggest problem that they have is that they, you know, there's an attitude, an air of losing here. So in the beginning of the game, everything is great and everything is fine, and just as long as things continue to go fine, you know, there's hard play and there's a sense of hope. But the minute that something seems to, you know, they hit some adversity, you know, it's almost like here we go again. Well, when you're building a team, you know, you've got to instill that in your guys that, you know what, the game is not over until the clock says 0-0-0, first of all. Second of all, understand that we're going to do some good things. You're going, as an individual player, as an individual unit, defense, offense, and special teams, you're going to do some special things, but you're also going to hit the other team. They got players too, and they're going to make some plays, and they're going to do some good things, and they're going to make you look bad every once in a while, but you stay at it. Understand that the game is not over until the clock says 0-0-0, and you keep fighting, and you give yourself an opportunity to win. And I think when you have a head coach who exemplifies that and who preaches that and who pushes that, and most importantly, who can get his guys to believe that, then that team is headed in the most positive of directions, and they are going to win some games.
Seth Joyner, what's happening then, speaking of this, of the sense of commitment to each other, what's happened with Atlanta the last few weeks? What's missing there?
Just from a pure football standpoint, I think the problem with Atlanta is the fact that, you know, A, defensively, they're a good defense. They're not a great defense. You know, they've touted themselves, you know, with John Abrams, sure, they've made themselves better. But I just think that, you know, they're a good defense. They're not a great defense. They need the help of their offense in order for their defense to be effective. The problem with their offense is the fact that they've gotten away from the fact that they are a running team, okay? You know, Michael Vick hasn't averaged over 200 yards passing, you know, in any particular season his entire career. Yet, you know, he's on the verge of rushing for 1,000 yards this season. Warwick Dunn, 1,000-yard guy for, like, forever. But they've gotten away from, you know, running the ball, which I think is what makes Michael Vick the player that he is. When you're able to run the ball, now you can roll them out. And where is he most dangerous? When he's outside of the pocket. You know, so until they get back to running the ball 30 times a game and allowing Michael to throw the ball 15 to 20 times a game, they're going to continue to struggle. You know, I mean, you see the quarterback change in Denver, the same thing. Nick, you see the quarterback change in Denver. I don't think that it's so much that Jake Plummer isn't playing with any effectiveness. I think what it is they're not running the ball as effectively as that team normally runs the ball. And when you
that's
don't
interesting
run
you mentioned that, too. That's a team that's connected by Alex Gibbs, the same running system that Alex Gibbs brought to Denver. He's brought to Atlanta. And for whatever reason, they've gotten away from that.
Well, when you don't run the ball, I mean, that's something I hang my hat on all the time. When you don't run the ball, it's very difficult for any offense, you know, to succeed. But when you have quarterbacks that make plays on the move, like Jake Plummer, like Michael Vick, when you don't run the ball, you make it even that much more difficult because now the play action is dead. You can't get those guys outside of the box because the defense understands that they can't run the ball. So get back to what you do best. Now, they're making the change in Denver, but I guarantee you, Jay Cutler's not going to do any – he's not going to do that much better. He might make some better throws. He might make some better decisions from the pocket, but he's not going to have – he's not going to be that effective if they don't run the football.
And what they're going to do is they're going to protect him, especially this first game. You and I know they're going to be running that ball. Here's Bill Moss from Fox Television about the cult of the mobile quarterbacks.
No, and I think that's the thing that people get caught up in. You know, I was listening to the Monday night game last night, and it's all about quarterbacks. Make the change. Well, he's not doing good. He didn't do good this year. Make the change. But we're so caught up in make the change now. But no one wants to change because the quarterback isn't the offense. I mean, you know, that's not the offense. Sure, you need a good one back there. But a good one can't be a good one without the other 10 players around him. I mean, it's that simple. Without the offensive line that can protect, without the running back and the running game, without the tight end and the wide receivers running their routes, quarterback's only just one part of the puzzle. And when you have one struggling, he wasn't named the starting quarterback for your team because nobody believed in him. He showed something to make him the starting quarterback. Well, when the other parts fall down around him, then you have to look and say, okay, we do have problems blocking. We do have problems running the football. Do we have a guy in there that can, you know, extend the play for us with his mobility? And that's what they got with in Romo. I'm not sure what they got yet with Cutler.
That's Bill Moss, Fox Television. When we come back, we're going to talk some more with Steph Joyner about Brett Favre, about Vince Young, and this mobile quarterback rage, and who's able to throw accurately besides Tony Romo when their feet aren't set. You're listening to Head Games Radio on Sports Byline Network and Sirius Satellite Channel 122. By the way, for all the clips, if you want to listen to the show, go to headgamesradio.com. You don't just need a Sirius Satellite Radio. You can go to Head Games Radio and get all the clips, all the highlights. We'll be right back with Seth Joyner with final thoughts in just a minute.